When was the last time you immersed yourself in a newspaper, or swiped your way through a news website, or sat down and watched a news broadcast? We inhabit a world that is drenched in news, don't we? With just a few clicks or swipes, we can access information about events unfolding in the farthest corners of our world. Every piece of news we encounter leads to a response. 3 weeks ago, I was gripped by the story of the mutiny happening in Russia as the Wagner Group were marching on Moscow. What was going to happen? As some believed that this was the end of the Russian regime, whilst others thought it would meet its end early. As some were amazed that these events were happening, whilst others were cynical that it was a Russian publicity plot. Some people were concerned for the Russian people. Others couldn't care less. Every piece of news we encounter leads to a response. What went through your mind when you heard that news? Maybe you didn't even hear about it and you're wondering what on earth I'm on about. The point being though, news leads to a reaction. As we hear news, we do something about it, even if it's ignore it. Well, this section of Matthew that we're in this morning has been all about news. You can see that in verse 35 of our passage. It says this: Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and illness. That's a great summary of what we've seen so far. This is the end of that section. You see, in Matthew 5-7, Jesus was proclaiming the good news of the kingdom in what we call the Sermon on the Mount. And in this bit of the Gospel, Matthew 8-9, Jesus has been healing every disease and illness. He's shown that he is willing and able to rescue those living in the land of the shadow of death, that he has brought life, brought light into this dark world. And as we come to the end of this section of Matthew's Gospel, in summary of everything we've seen so far, we are left with a question. As Matthew closes this bit of his Gospel, he wants us to ask, how should we respond to the good news of the kingdom? What do you make of it? How does it change your thinking? What difference will it make to you tomorrow morning? Matthew wants us to be all about the good news of the kingdom, to be gripped by it, to be totally enthralled by it, to see just how good this news is, to believe that Jesus is able to save from death, to see that he really has come to do something new, and to care about those around us who haven't heard. This morning, the aim is that we all leave convinced that this really is good news that everyone needs to hear. So as we see Jesus, we see his response here. We're called to reflect on our own and to bring them into line with his. And so, let's look at the first thing this morning. Believe that Jesus is able to save from death. That is our first thing to see. We're to believe that Jesus is able to save from death. That's verses 27-31 of Matthew 9. Throughout these two chapters of Matthew, this has been the drumbeat. We've seen amazing things. Pharmacies closed. Hospital waiting lists empty, even the funeral homes boarded up. Why? Well, because Jesus has been going around showing his ability to save from death. We saw that a few weeks ago. We saw a few weeks ago that these were more than mere stories of things Jesus did. These are more than assorted examples of Jesus' authority. All of these stories here in Matthew 8-9 are coming together to show that Jesus has come to give life in place of death. And if we hadn't gotten that yet, last week with Sam, we actually encountered a dead girl. As clear as Matthew could make it, a dead girl being raised to life by Jesus. Jesus is able to save from death. And in our passage this morning, we find two more miracles. And the first here in these verses is of two blind men. Although they can't see, they have 20/20 vision of Jesus' ability to save from death. Now, we might be thinking to ourselves, blindness isn't really an issue. Well, maybe it's an issue, but it's one that you can work around. But in Jesus' day, it's debilitating. You couldn't work. You couldn't look after yourself. You had to rely on others giving you assistance. You were trapped in darkness all the time. In fact, you have the same eyesight as the dead. The dead, of course, see nothing. This is a physical condition that gives another angle to those dwelling in darkness, those under the shadow of death. But notice, these guys see something that is blindingly obvious. They see that Jesus has come to do something about it. They see that Jesus is able to save from death, so they follow him and they shout, verse 27, "Have mercy on us, son of David!" They know that Jesus can do something about their situation. They know that Jesus has come to show mercy to his people, to save his people. They call him Son of David. They recognise him as the king who is to come, the one who's been promised, the one that Matthew said Jesus is. Matthew 1 verse 1, the genealogy of Jesus the Messiah, the Son of David. They get who Jesus is. They get what he's come to do. They paid attention to what's going on in the towns and villages, and they throw themselves on Jesus publicly. They call out. They want to receive mercy from him. They see Jesus as the solution to the shadow of death over this world. And so verse 28, as they go indoors, Jesus asks them, "Do you believe that I am able to do this?" I mean, they're calling out and they're following. It makes it clear that they do. That is the point. That is what's going on here. Disciples, followers of Jesus, believe that Jesus has come to save from death. And that's what these two blind men believe. So Jesus touches their eyes and their sight is restored. And that gets connected to their faith. Have a look at verse 29. "According to your faith, let it be done to you." What Jesus is saying here is that because you trust me to do this, I shall do it. Their faith, their utter dependence, their cry to Jesus for mercy is on display here. And it pays off. Jesus shows it works. Jesus opens their eyes. He restores their sight. It's a simple story, isn't it? Yet notice what Jesus says to them in verse 30. Now, this might seem a bit weird. What does he say? Jesus warned them sternly, "See that no one knows about this." Now, do you see, there's a wrong way to speak of Jesus. There is a wrong way to share the good news. That is what's going on here. Unless we properly understand the news, then it's no good news at all. Jesus has said something similar before, actually, in Matthew 8, verse 4. After healing the man with leprosy, Jesus said, "Don't tell anyone." You see, these healings are amazing. But to stop there is to miss the actual news, the news that makes a difference. It'd be like watching that news of the mutiny in Russia and thinking the Wagner group was simply wanting a stroll through the Russian woods. It misses the point. In the world filled with darkness, people can misunderstand. In fact, people do misunderstand what Jesus is doing. We know we're on the right track when we see later in Matthew's gospel, people aren't misunderstanding what Jesus came to do. Another time when the crowds are cheering for the Son of David, what they're actually cheering for is a champion to come and defeat the Romans there and then. They've missed that Jesus has come early to demonstrate what he's going to do later. In fact, just flick forward a page in your Bibles to Matthew 11, verse 2. In this chapter, we see some of the confusion from John the Baptist. He says, "When John, who was in prison, heard about the deeds of the Messiah, he sent his disciples to ask him, 'Are you the one to come? Or should we expect someone else?'" Just notice there, John has heard about the deeds, about the works, about the things Jesus is doing, the stories of the healings. But it's not enough. We're going to come back to this in a moment. But the point here is this: there is more to what Jesus is doing than stories of healings can tell. And so he says to these men to not share the news that's going to sell him short. These are amazing stories, but to see only a bit of them might miss the mark. Jesus has come to save those under the power of death, not simply to make people's life more comfortable. Jesus has come to save those living in darkness, not to just tell a great story. There are many churches out there who don't tell the true story of Jesus. I mean, how do we portray Jesus this morning? We have to realise that Jesus is the one who opens the eyes of the blind. And whilst people are still in the dark, it can be hard to see what Jesus is truly about. Perhaps you're here this morning and you don't know what all the fuss about Jesus is. As you hear the news about Jesus, are you seeing anything? Are you seeing a glimmer of light, perhaps? We want to continue to hear the full message of Jesus here in this gospel. So why don't you ask Jesus to show you some more? Well, the second thing we see in our response to Jesus is there in verses 32 to 34. This is our second point this morning. See that something new is here. See that something new is here. We have another person brought to Jesus, and again, is a picture of someone under the power of death. This time, they're as silent as the grave. It's a man who's deaf and mute. Those two things are the same word in Jesus' day. Yet notice what's causing this man's silence. It's demon possession. We saw this a few weeks back, if you want to think about it some more. But in the space of two verses, two sentences, Jesus has driven the demon out. Wham, bam, and the job is done. But notice the change here. The man is silent in verse 32. And then verse 33, the man who had been mute spoke. Jesus is able to take those who are silent, silent as the grave, and give them something to shout about. This man is now left free to speak the truth. So what's going on here? Is this just another story you could tell someone about Jesus? Well, we've just been saying that would be a poor response. Instead, we have to see more of what's going on here. You see, in healing the blind and now the mute, Matthew expects us to pick up on something said earlier by the prophet. You see, back in Isaiah 35, Isaiah said this: strengthen the feeble hands, steady the knees that give way, say to those with fearful hearts, be strong, do not fear, your God will come. He will come with vengeance, with divine retribution, he will come to save you. Then the eyes of the blind will be opened, the ears of the deaf unstopped, then the lame leap like a deer, and the mute tongue shout for joy. Isaiah, writing 700 years before Jesus, is looking forward to the day when God is going to come and rescue his people. His people whose knees are knocking, whose hands are shaking, who are fearful, worrying what's going to happen next, living in the land of the shadow of death. And Isaiah calls his people to continue to trust that God is coming. And here's where it connects. You will know that that day has come, that God is certainly coming, that the Messiah has come when, verse 5, the eyes of the blind are opened and the ears of the deaf are unstopped. You see, by pairing these two signs together, Matthew is showing that Jesus has come to bring about those promises. In fact, as we read through the passage, you might have noticed other bits from this section. Again, we know we're on the right path because that is how Jesus answers John's question. Remember, John is asking if Jesus really is the king who is meant to be coming. Is he really the son of David, as those blind men were saying? And how does he respond? Well, flick forward in your Bibles to Matthew 11, verse 4. Jesus answered, "Go and tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, and the dead are raised up, and the poor have good news preached to them." Jesus is saying, you see, these signs, John, you see them? Well, they're pointing to the fact the king is here. Don't miss the new thing. See that something new is here. Yeah, there is a danger here, isn't there? And that comes in the two responses we see in verses 33 to 34. Just like watching the news, it's easy to have an opinion on it. As I said earlier, the Russia news 3 weeks ago generated a lot of opinion. But mere opinion doesn't cut it. Have a look at the first, Matthew 9:33. The crowd was amazed and said nothing like this has ever been seen in Israel. The crowd has seen that this is a new thing. Nothing like this has ever been seen in Israel. They're amazed. But amazement doesn't cut it. In fact, if they're amazed by this, we're meant to be thinking they've missed the point. Do you remember a few weeks ago, the words that were said by the demons? Really important. I wonder if Matthew's connecting us to that through these two demon situations. The demons back in Matthew 8:29 reminded us of the calendar. What did they say? Matthew 8:29. "Have you come here to torture us before the appointed time?" Do you remember Jesus was doing a Blue Peter? He'd come ahead of time to show what he was going to do in the end. Here's one I made earlier. You can look at these stories of Jesus and you could be amazed. I mean, that'd be a right reaction to have, wouldn't it? What we've had a leper looking like the living dead, completely cleansed. A paralysed man, corpse-like servant, healed. Peter's mother-in-law at death's door, raised to serve. Jesus' disciples on a boat, rescued from the threat of death. Two men, demon-possessed, rescued from the power of death. Another corpse-like paralytic, raised with a word, his sins forgiven. A woman with bleeding, healed. That in the middle of a story of a young girl, dead, raised to life. Plus the blind men and the mute man here. If you're not amazed by that, well, there is something wrong with you. It's truly amazing stuff. But to simply look at the sign and miss the destination is disastrous. And to be muddled at the timings too knocks everything off course. If you are looking this morning for signs and wonders in the here and the now, if you're always out there looking for the next miracle story, if you are all about this moment and you're missing that Jesus is pointing us to a greater future, change your mind this morning. Satan throughout the Bible loves to have us focused on the here and the now. That's one of his main tactics. He wants us to take our eyes off the future. How much more should we be amazed if we understand what these miracles truly mean? That they're merely a foretaste, a demonstration of the kingdom in all of its glory. They are a window through which we can see Jesus utterly defeating death itself. Of that final day when he's going to wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. Don't settle for amazement now. Follow the signs here to the destination. And definitely, definitely don't react like the Pharisees. Verse 34. But the Pharisees said, "It is by the prince of demons that he drives out demons." Notice the Pharisees, they don't dispute the miracles of Jesus. I mean, they've seen them with their own two eyes. But they are dangerously dismissive. They see the life-giving work of Jesus and attribute it to the powers of the dead. They see that Jesus is coming to save from the power of death, but that they claim he's working for the power of death. They don't want what Jesus is offering. They don't want to align with Jesus' plan. They are blind to what he's doing. What do you make of their reaction? We're meant to be horrified. Given just how amazing this truth is, it's breathtakingly dismissive. Don't simply have an opinion this morning. Don't simply comment on Jesus here. Instead, see that he has come to do the new thing that God had promised all along. Throw yourselves onto him. Open your mouths and declare this good news to those around you. In fact, that's our third thing this morning. Have compassion on the lost. Verses 35 to 38. If we truly believe that Jesus is able to save from death, and we've seen that the new thing really is here, it should cause us to look around and have compassion for the lost. Look at verse 36. When Jesus saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Now, I don't know about you, but when I look out at people around me, I don't naturally see them the way Jesus sees them. As I walk through Hemel High Street, as I sit down in the coffee shop, as I drop the kids off at school, Jesus looks and he sees the crowds. He sees those who aren't following him yet, those who are just going about their daily business, and he sees a sheep without a shepherd. Now, Izzy and I visit Wales a fair amount. And when we see a sheep without a shepherd, well, I see an annoyance. We're driving around the narrow roads and all of a sudden there's just a sheep there, standing in the middle of the road. I stare at it, it stares at me, and nothing happens. We are stuck. Sheep are an annoyance. It's only when the sound of the quad bike is heard that I have any hope that something's going to be done. I mean, it's someone else's job to deal with. Just let them do it. See, I wonder if our approach to those around us can be similar to me and sheep. People around us are fine until they get in our way. I mean, go into London during the summer and get stuck behind a tourist. You know what I'm talking about. People around us are fine until they get in our way, and then they're just an annoyance. But that's part of the point here. As we see how Jesus looks at these crowds, we're meant to reflect on how he sees them. And as we follow Jesus as his disciples, we follow how he thinks, we follow how he acts. And so we should have the same compassion on those around us. If we keep this statement in context, we'll notice it follows from verse 35. Verse 35, the summary of this whole section of what Jesus has been doing. In fact, it's almost a repeat of what was said in chapter 4. Flip back in your Bibles to Matthew 4, verse 23. That's the start of this section of Matthew's Gospel. We're at the end of it now. Matthew 4:23 says, Jesus went throughout Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and illness among the people. That is what Matthew wants us to see that Jesus has been doing. Do you remember, he went up on a mountain, chapters 5 to 7, to proclaim the good news of the kingdom. And then chapters 8 to 9, he healed every disease and illness among the people to show what that kingdom is going to look like before the time. And so, come back with me to Matthew 9. In verse 36, we get Jesus' thoughts on what's happened so far. Jesus has done amazing things. We've seen that already. But it's only scratched the surface. There are still crowds of people who need to hear the good news in Jerusalem, in Israel, in the entire world. There are still crowds of people who are still under the shadow of death. Crowds of people without hope. Look at the wording here. These people are harassed and helpless. Are those words we'd use of people in our lives, of our co-workers, our family, our friends? When I look out at people, they seem pretty sorted, perhaps the occasional blip, but otherwise fine. But Jesus sees them as harassed and helpless. When I look out, I see people who know what they're doing, self-sufficient, capable on their own. But Jesus sees them as sheep without a shepherd. If you're like me this morning, we need to change our minds. We're called to follow Jesus and see people as he does. Because outside of Jesus, everyone is without hope because the kingdom is near. Judgment is coming. Remember what Jesus had been saying in the Sermon on the Mount. If we believe that, we have to believe that there are people who are harassed and helpless. And without Jesus, people are stuck, living in the shadow of death, living in darkness. The world around us knows that, really. There's no one who can escape that without the good news of Jesus. No matter how people seem, what they are underneath is still the same. So what's the solution? Well, Jesus turns to his disciples. Remember, a disciple is someone who follows Jesus. And they say, he says, verse 37, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. What do you hear Jesus saying there? If you were to put this in your own words, what would you say? Let me read those few words again. How would you put this? The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. See, I reckon we read most of that sentence wrong. We read most of that sentence and we think the complete opposite of what Jesus is actually saying. Perhaps I'm wrong here, but I tend to think the harvest is few and the workers, well, they're plentiful. I mean, do people really want to hear about Jesus today? I don't tend to think so. And aren't there so many church workers out there? I mean, there are loads of people going to Bible colleges, missionaries, loads of church leaders all over the place. But take another look. That isn't what Jesus is saying, is he? Jesus is saying the harvest is plentiful. Just notice there is a harvest. And it's plentiful. It's not measly. And when Jesus says workers, he's not saying full-time paid gospel ministers. Remember who he's speaking to, verse 37. He's speaking to his disciples. He's speaking to those who follow him. It's really important we see this, so we don't get this wrong. It's not leaders that Jesus is calling for. It's workers. And in Matthew's gospel, a worker is a disciple of Jesus. Someone who believes that Jesus can save from death. Someone who's seen that the new thing is here. And so someone who goes out and has compassion on the lost, tells them the good news of the kingdom. If you carry on reading through Matthew's gospel, that's what you're going to see come up next. I'd encourage you to keep reading. Come and chat with me some more if you do that. But big thing here, verse 39, Jesus says, if you're a disciple, ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. Ask, or the word there, beg, plead with the Lord of the harvest. See the need to reach those people who are under the shadow of death. Have compassion on the lost. See them as Jesus sees them. Ask the Lord to send out workers into his harvest field. Notice again, there is a harvest. And the implication, if that prayer is answered, it means we go. I mean, that is how Matthew's going to end his gospel, Matthew 28. Go. Believe that this really is good news. Really share that with others around you. Jesus, one man, reaching that area around him. You can see the 12 reach slightly further. Imagine even more than that. I mean, that's both exciting and daunting, isn't it? God promises there's a harvest. There are people, there really are people who want to hear the good news. It really is good news. Yet it is daunting. But if we look at people with Jesus' eyes, if we don't see people as self-sufficient, as fine, as disinterested, if we see them as truly in need, if we really believe that the kingdom is near, that will change our thinking. Rather than being daunted at having to speak, we'll be daunted at how many people need to speak to reach the world out there. We'll stop thinking of ourselves and we'll think of others. And we'll beg, we'll ask, we'll plead with the Lord for more workers, for more disciples to share that good news. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and illness. How should we respond to that good news? The news that light has dawned, the news that Jesus has come to rescue those living in the land of the shadow of death. Should it be like me on a Saturday morning, following the news of a mutiny in Russia, looking on with interest, having an opinion, but ultimately getting on with everything else? Of course not. If we really believe that this is good news, we'll believe it and we'll have compassion on those who haven't heard it yet. I'm going to leave God's Spirit to work in our lives, in our hearts, in our minds, as we think about that. But I'm also going to pray, I'm going to plead, I'm going to beg that Jesus would work that in us, to help us see things as he does and spur us into action. Can I do that now? Let's pray.